This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 5th of April 2019. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 4th of April 2019, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayn, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: £1 million cost of Brexit lorry park, progress on bus station revamp, and revealed Hampshire dog fighting statistics. So we will start with the story behind the first headline.
Right, I can see more. £1 million cost of Brexit lorry park. A lorry park installed on a major Winchester route could cost county finances £1 million if there is a no-deal Brexit. The figure was revealed in a Brexit preparedness report due to go before Hampshire County Council's Cabinet next week. Residents reacted furiously when given just a few days' notice of the works on the A31 between Winchester and Alresford last month. The report reveals, should full implementation of the A31 plan be required, the total cost, including triage services and 6 weeks of running costs, would be an estimated £1 million. It adds that should the lorry park be needed beyond an initial 6 weeks, the additional running costs would be an estimated £70,000 per week. The lorry park, which the report says was completed ahead of schedule, was ordered after the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Local Resilience Forum, a group that works to prepare for emergencies, identified a high risk of significant traffic congestion due to delays at Portsmouth International Port in the event of a no-deal Brexit. The report added, delays at Portsmouth would cause lorry queues onto the M275, the M27, the A3 brackets M within a short timescale, impacting both local and strategic roads. In a responsible worst-case scenario, disruption could last for up to 6 months. Traffic disruption and delays would impact road users, usually residents, businesses, emergency and other public services, and affect the flow of exports and imports. The A31 lorry park would mitigate against that risk by using a 5 kilometre section of the A31 between the Percy Hobbs roundabout near Winchester and the Ladycroft roundabout near Alresford, including a triage point and the capacity to hold between 200 and 300 heavy goods vehicles along the southbound carriageway destined to the port, travelling from the A34, M3 and A3. The report goes on to say county chiefs will be seeking reimbursement for the A31 costs from central government. However, civic chiefs sparked fury last month over the lack of warning of the implementation of the lorry park, which meant Alresford residents heading towards Winchester faced a 6 mile diversion to join the A31 at the same point due to the Ladycroft roundabout design. One of those to hit out was Christina Fernley of Alresford Road, who said, "Our family is already feeling the effects of this monstrous decision. There are a large number of residents and businesses between the Percy Hobbs and Ladycroft roundabouts that are affected and who have been given little or no time to prepare for these works." Responding to the fury, Winchester MP Steve Brine said, "For a start, the PM has confirmed Parliament will have to agree to our leaving the EU with no withdrawal agreement in place, and I'm confident we won't allow that. But on the A31 specifically, I am clear this work is the wrong response from the LRF, which is contrary to the modelling provided by the DfT Department for Transport around lorry movement from Portsmouth, should there be any interruption to the roll-on, roll-off process. But if, and they can answer why they're doing this, they insisted on going ahead, it's unacceptable not to inform local residents, and that goes for local councillors as much as anyone else. Liberal Democrat Winchester City councillors have also slammed Mr. Brine for being unaware of the works. County and City Councillor Jackie Porter, it is extraordinary that we and our MP have only just heard about this panic proposal by the county to use the A31 in the case of a no-deal Brexit, just days before implementation. It's a measure which will have a significant impact on the whole of Winchester and Alsford in particular."
Progress on bus station revamp. Civic chiefs have taken a step closer to getting improvements at Winchester bus station after appointing two firms to the project. Winchester City Council has appointed Carl Turner Architects, CTA, and Winchester-based Creative Worthwhile Works to carry out a feasibility study into the short-term options for the unused section of the site. It's been identified as an area that could be used for, quote, meanwhile uses, unquote, before the start of wider regeneration work on the Saxon Gate, commonly known as Silver Hill 2, area. Councillor Caroline Brooke, chairman of the council's Meanwhile Uses Advisory Panel, said, "The exciting project to create meanwhile use of an unused area of the bus station is an integral part in the Saxon Gate project and the feasibility study to ensure any work done on the site is achievable and sustainable is a key step forward in this project. The detailed proposal that Carl Turner Architects and Worthwhile Works put forward met many aspects of our brief, and we are looking forward to taking the first steps to investigate what can be done in the bus station location. Plans have been floated by the City Council to turn the space into a hub for food and retail pop-up businesses, similar to those in York and London. The bus station will eventually be vacated by the buses, which, according to the scheme's supplementary planning document, could relocate to the Middlebrook Street car park. Architect Carl Turner said, "Winchester is full of rich history and exciting possibilities for the future. We are looking forward to exploring the potential of this historical site to ensure any work carried out will benefit everyone." Wendy Wyatt of Worthwhile Works added, "As well as incredible heritage, Winchester is full of talent, incredible food producers, a world-class art school, a thriving art centre, and an abundance of creative businesses. We want to explore how we can help Winchester's community to further encourage participation, well-being, and growth."
Revealed Hampshire dogfighting statistics. Almost 150 reports of dogfighting incidents have been reported in Hampshire in the past 4 years, new figures from the RSPCA reveal. The leading animal welfare charity released figures ahead of Dogfighting Awareness Day, Monday, April the 8th, an occasion recognised in the United States, which the charity believes should be extended to the UK, where dogfighting is still rife. A total of 149 reports of dogfighting have been reported in Hampshire in the last 4 years. The RSPCA Dogfighting Expert and Special Operations Unit, SOU, Chief Inspector Mike Butcher said, our figures show that in the past 4 years, the RSPCA has received 7,915 reports of dogfighting incidents. While it is promising to see that these figures are dropping year on year, it is still staggering that something which has been illegal for almost 200 years and a bloody pastime, which most people would consider consigned to history, is still so rife. Dogfighting was outlawed in England in 1835, but still goes on today. The RSPCA is the country's leading organisation tackling dogfighting, and for the last four decades, the RSPCA's SOU unit has been investigating reports, rescuing dogs and prosecuting participants. London was found to be a dogfighting hotspot with 653 cases in the past 4 years. And this is accompanied by a photograph of a Staffordshire bull terrier called Carl, shortly after being rescued from a dogfight. And I have to say, I'm quite pleased that you can't see this photograph. The poor dog has obviously been severely mauled. But the good news is he has now been rescued and rehomed.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Arias, Emilio Arias, on the 19th of March. Broadwood, Anne Marion Broadwood, on the 27th of March at the Dower House, Headbourne Worthy, aged 100. Butcher, Leslie Owen Butcher, on the 27th of March. James, Leslie Norman James, known as Les, on the 16th of March. Jones, Jennifer Mary Jones, on the 17th of March, aged 89. Rake, Judy Ann Fitzpatrick Rake, on the 15th of March, aged 79. Sherwood, Kathleen Doris Gladys Sherwood, known as Kath, at Sunrise of Winchester on the 7th of March, aged 94. Shooker, Joan Shooker, on the 24th of March, in hospital, aged 87. Wren, Nigel Edgar Wren, on the 28th of March, aged 62. Yates, Joyce Eileen Yates, on the 27th of March at Countess Mountbatten Hospice. And now we have Christian comment.
A home for the homeless. Last year I participated in the Trinity Big Sleepout. A group of us from the office, including Bishop David and our chief executive, pulled out our sleeping bags and made a shelter out of cardboard and slept in the grounds of the bishop's home at Wolseley, together with about 100 others. We all raised sponsorship to support Trinity, one of a number of agencies that work with the homeless in Winchester. Why not gather a team from your office and join on the 17th of May this year in the cathedral grounds? Spending one night sleeping on cardboard is, of course, nothing like the experience of being homeless. The sleepout is simply a way of raising awareness of the needs of people who have nowhere to live. One of the biggest fears when you're out on the streets is being safe. We had security guards watching over us, but that doesn't happen when you're sleeping in a shop doorway. We were able to buy great food before climbing into our makeshift beds. But that's not the case when you're living rough and you don't know where your next meal is coming from. Yesterday, the Dean welcomed people who were affected by homelessness to a special service in the cathedral. During the service, we read out the names of those within that community who had died, Some had died because of addictions, accidents, or suicide. Over 40 names were read out. We lit candles as reminders of how the light of Christ shines even in the midst of the darkest times. One woman who was helped by the Winchester Church's night shelter shared a poem about her experience of being listened to, of sharing her pain, and finding confidence again in who she was created to be. The nurture and love she received helped her life to flourish like a flower in full bloom. Anyone can end up homeless. One man had a professional job, wife and family, when everything fell apart. It could happen to you or me, just as it did to him. The Reverend Katie Lawrence, curate of the cathedral, introduced the theme, Stronger Together, Celebrating Shared Journeys. Those working with the homeless in the city share journeys that lead to wholeness and healing. One of the volunteer groups at the cathedral is close pastors who chat with people who spend time in the sunshine in the outer close. Often, the close pastors will chat with those who were invited to the service yesterday. By spending time together, the journey of life is shared. Jesus shares these journeys too. He was a refugee when he was a toddler, as his parents had to flee Egypt to avoid him being killed by King Herod. As a travelling rabbi, Jesus relied on the hospitality of others to offer him a bed for the night. Inspired by Christ, we hope the cathedral can be a home for the homeless as much as it is a shared space for those of us who've always had a roof over our heads. And this was by Mark Collinson, Canon Principal, Winchester Diocese's School of Mission.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got quite a crop of letters this week, I think 17 in total. Quite a few of them are mercifully short, and there are no prizes for guessing what the principal topic is about.
And so off we go. First letter, which is entitled Back to the Future, is from Nick Ray. Sir, I notice Ray Green had two separate letters printed in the Hampshire Chronicle on March the 28th, each giving him a bite of the Brexit-related cherry. On this basis, as Ray demands his second say, I feel sure he would offer no objection to a second referendum, which might solve all our problems without the whole-scale upheaval Brexit threatens and which so doubly exercises your correspondent. Mr. Green also suggests that those who don't share his Leave opinions should emigrate. Could he advise your curious reader as to whether this should include destinations such as Scotland, Northern Ireland, Gibraltar or the Falkland Isles, where exactly post-Brexit Great Britain is and will remain? Surely Mr. Green cannot, for example, feel at home in Remain's stronghold Winchester. Even conservative Britain clearly proves problematic, as Mr. Green's rant at Steve Brine shows. Given all of which, would not a better alternative to such fulminations be, both for him and at least for 16 million, now plus and in the majority, Remainers having to pack our bags, for Ray Green to remove himself, perhaps to the 200 years ago pages of the Chronicle, a place where perhaps he and most of the rest of us left in a modern cosmopolitan Britain, which is both part of Europe and the rest of the real world, would feel much happier. So writes Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And a second letter in response to Ray Green's letter. This is written by Roger Stevens. Sir, Mr. Green's letter is a classic of the genre. So, we rid ourselves of the people who disagree with us, not much brotherhood of man there, and hey presto, suddenly everything will be wonderful. How is this nirvana going to be achieved? By a lavish sprinkling of Brexit dust, perhaps? Brexit is just a catalogue of gripes. What is the programme of legislation that would be put before our sovereign parliament that will, one by one, tear off the bonds of the yoke of Brussels? When we are finally free, what new laws will be passed to enable us to benefit from the best the world can provide? Well, in truth, there are no plans for the future. Or if there are, no one dares to tell us. Brexit is a pig in a poke. A poke so deep and gloomy that it would be full of rats, for all we know. Which one of our leaders will guide us through the choppy waters of our post-Brexit world? Well, probably not Mrs. May, who will always be quite clear that Brexit means Brexit. But what about No Paperwork Davis? Yes, our erstwhile chief Brexit negotiator. Or easiest free trade deal in history, Fox. Let's not forget Senator Battleship Williamson, Karen Bradley, who recently discovered that religion is, well, important in Irish politics, and Feining Grayling, who is still our Transport Secretary. Of course, the outstanding choice is the court fool, the have our cake and eat it erstwhile Foreign Secretary. He's the obvious candidate to show our contempt for all foreigners as our nation reaches out to the world to establish beneficial trade deals. When Brexit Day finally dawns, a government of capable, knowledgeable and responsible people is not suddenly going to appear by magic. Don't any Brexiteers tremble at the thought of our current plague of politicians negotiating with the likes of Donald Trump. It will be hello, coronated chicken, and goodbye, NHS. Then we will learn how it feels to live in a vassal state. And that was written by Roger Stevens of Cliffway, Compton.
And here's another one about Mr. Green's letter, headed Messy Business, and it comes from Russell Gordon Smith. Sir, what an appalling letter the Hampshire Chronicle published from Ray Green, March the 28th. I am put in mind of Louis the 14th, who drove out the Protestant Huguenots from France as they disagreed with the majority faith of Roman Catholicism. This turned out to be very detrimental to the French economy and a huge boost to the British. In a democracy, people are allowed to disagree, even vociferously, and to push for change for as long as it takes. Would Mr. Green have wished the Chartists, the suffragettes, to have left the country and not succeeded in their campaigns to gain the right to vote for all men and women, as they did not respect the majority view at the time? Democracy is a messy business, certainly, and like many, I much regret the deep divisions that have appeared in our country, for little good to either the majority or the minority. And this is from Russell Gordon Smith, West Street, Alsford.
Disturbing, writes Rupert Pitt. Sir Steve Brine, the Winchester MP, has resigned and wrote on page 29 of the March the 28th with regard to negotiations to leave the EU that, quote, I feel so passionate that leaving without a withdrawal agreement, commonly referred to as a deal, is not acceptable to me or in the national interest, unquote. Now, this is what the Conservative Manifesto says for the 2017 election. Page 37. Following the historic referendum on the 23rd of June 2016, the United Kingdom is leaving the European Union. The negotiations will undoubtedly be tough, and there will be give and take on both sides, but we continue to believe that no deal is better than a bad deal for the UK. Page 39. As well as the Great Repeal Bill, we will bring forward a number of additional bills to ensure that when we have left the EU, there is a clear statutory basis for United Kingdom authorities to exercise powers that are currently exercised through EU law and institutions. It would appear to me that Mr. Brine was elected on the basis the government would negotiate to leave the EU, and if any withdrawal agreement was a bad deal, then the government would implement no deal as per page 37. He had thus gone back on a statement made on the basis on which people voted for him. I am disturbed by this. There is a wider principle that in any negotiation we reserve the right to walk away from a bad deal. When you buy a house, possibly the biggest contract you will sign, you don't say to the seller or estate agent, "We will never walk away. We will always come back to negotiate a price." The ability to walk away from a bad contract is one of the strengths every person negotiating has. It makes no sense to remove it. You are always locked in. I have come to believe the many reports in the papers that MPs are out of touch with the electorate. And that's from Rupert Pitt, St Cross Road, Winchester.
This is another letter about Brexit, surprisingly. But it is mercifully short. It's written by E. Wright. Sir, I wrote to you on May the 11th, 2017, when I likened Brexit to a second peasants' revolt. The first revolt collapsed at the very last moment, following treachery by the king's men and the murder of the revolt's leader. Is history repeating itself? That's written by E. Wright, Alexander Road, Chalmersford, Eastleigh.
And here's a letter from Mr. Waterman. Guess what the subject is? A sick joke. Sir, I have watched the news, read the papers on so-called Brexit, and find it has turned into a sick joke, a total mess. Where were all the people who wanted to stay when the referendum took place? They say that they are the majority. Why did they not get off their backsides when the referendum was held? Some who are now shouting did, but many did not. We should be out by now. It's called democracy. Certain people and most MPs have turned it into a right old mess, and I, for one, will never ever vote on anything again, be it general or local elections. Who can you trust to deliver? And this was from Mr. A.G. Waterman, Willis Way, Kingsworthy.
Now then, we've had a couple of letters referring to a correspondent called Ray Green. This letter is from Ray Green. And it's entitled Call to Resign. Sir, yet again our so-called Conservative MP, Steve Brine, voted for motions on Monday evening absolutely against the will of the people, despite on numerous occasions in this newspaper stating his intentions to support their will. He clearly does not deserve to represent the people of Winchester and Chalmersford. The local Conservative Party chairman, Jonathan Leggett, is refusing to respond to requests as to how members can instigate deselection procedures. Steve Brine resigned his government job. He should resign his local job too. That is from said Ray Green, Alexandra Palace, sorry, Terrace. Alexandra Terrace, Winchester.
Okay. Yes, this is written by Alistair Marsden, and it's headed Glass Houses, Sir. The government has asked Parliament to approve their Brexit plans three separate times in less than 3 months. The same government rejects a call for another referendum, claiming that this will be an insult to democracy. I can hear the sound of shattering glass in a house where stones should not be thrown. It's written by Alistair Marsden, Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, Winchester.
Right, this is from Mark Rowe, and it's headed, unlike Brexit, it's headed St George's Day. Oh. Sir, this St George's Day, April the 23rd, we, the English Democrats, will be in Winchester 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. by the Buttercross, celebrating England's National Day, alongside other political parties and others. All are welcome, as St George's Day is for everyone to celebrate. We will have question and answer session, a chance to see the whole political spectrum of politics in Winchester, as Winchester is now winnable for any political party and sets the standard for the rest of England, as England needs her people more than ever. See you all St George's Day. Even the Hampshire Chronicle will be welcome, as it is the voice for all and has international quality standard. Remember, all you are England, and England is you, as you matter, no matter who you are. And this is from Mark Rowe, Chairman of Winchester English Democrats.
This one's entitled Before the EU, and it's from John Vowles, BSc Ons, MSc. Sir, as a water and wastewater professional, I know exactly what membership of the EU has done to clean up our rivers and seas and protect our aquatic environment for wildlife, biodiversity, health and amenity. I also know what the rivers and seas were like before EU legislation. In the 1970s and 1980s, we were known as the Dirty Man of Europe. 80% of our sewage and industrial waste went into the sea and rivers untreated. Our rivers were dead. People regularly got hepatitis, ear infections and gastroenteritis from swimming and surfing. Now the rivers are clean. Brown trout, rainbow trout, sea trout and salmon have returned to the Itchen, Test and Avon in great numbers. Our local rivers are all class 1A. Our beaches are all clean and safe for bathing. Do we really want to return to those days of pollution and sickness because of a nebulous notion of sovereignty and national pride, or because of an aimless middle finger to the establishment? Do we want to return to days where there was little or no protection for the environment, no funding for green energy, no sustainable innovation, no animal welfare or food safety legislation? That's what we risk in the next few days with Brexit. That's from John Vowles, Atwoods Drove, Compton.
Well, I have an announcement to make. The next letter is not about Brexit.
Oh.
It's headed Highlight Water. It's written by Bill Ledbetter. Sir, regarding a new role for the site of the old leisure centre and grounds, it would seem reasonable to maintain it as a leisure resource, although a sports facility seems unlikely in view of the new facility at the Garrison Ground. There are several water courses there. How about a water garden, partly under glass for all-year enjoyment at a cafe and or a restaurant? Written by Bill Ledbetter, Highcliffe Road, Highcliffe, Winchester.
Planning Failure, this is headed by Michael Krask. Sir, hidden by the attention on Brexit, a national issue on planning for new homes mirrored in Winchester is a scandalous failure of public policy. Last month, the National Audit Office concluded that the planning system in England is not working well. A key finding is that the amount that developers contribute to the cost of infrastructure and affordable housing is far too low. payments have not increased since 2007, while nationally the top five developers' average operating profit margins increased from around 12% to 21% between 2012 and 2016. This has led to an annual shortfall of millions of pounds nationally in investment in local communities alongside new private developments. Nowhere does this show up more than in Winchester, where average contributions of £19,000 per house towards local infrastructure is at the same level as was being secured nationally in 2007. On a property valued at £192,000. With executive house prices in Winchester some four times this amount, the argument is that local developers should be paying an extra £57,000 per house on average, and Winchester should have received hundreds of thousands from the developers for investments in infrastructure, including transport, schools, hospitals, and health and social care facilities. Our overly developer-friendly Conservative City Council is allowing developers to cash in on house prices, swelling their coffers so they can bid even more for the next piece of land that comes on the market. This is one of the reasons why Winchester is the third most unaffordable city in the UK, and why so many people are being forced out of the area when they downsize or fly the nest. Instead, our communities should be getting more of the money to be made from development, as national planning policy intended. In St Barnabas Ward, we have been calling for a reform of the planning process. Please add your name and help us address this citywide policy failure. bit.ly/St Barnabas petition, all one word. It's clear to me, however, that a petition alone is not enough for such an important issue. Consequently, I will be standing for election as a councillor in May to be in a stronger position to effect change. And this is from Michael Krask, Stony Lane, Week, Winchester.
Sport for all, says Frank Henry. Sir, I was a little taken aback on reading your piece about the appointment of a new head of performance swimming at Penguin Swimming Club. In the article, the CEO of Penguins, Mike Fisher, is quoted as saying, "An opportunity exists to build a top-class swimming programme around our 50-metre pool, combining our ambition with that of Winchester University and the City Council." Unquote. Firstly, I hope that when he says our pool, he means Winchester's pool and not Penguins. Secondly, whilst I applaud the ambition of Penguins and perhaps the university to have the highest levels of international achievement, this should not be the primary function of the new pool. It is a community facility first and foremost, and should cater amply for young people and older people who will probably never compete and who may not want to be part of a swim pathway, but just want to use their local pool in their own time and in their own way for fun and fitness. An outreach programme could be a very good thing, but not if it requires a club membership to take advantage of it. The trend towards everything needing to be an organised activity, with people needing to be members and striving for success, can put off a lot of people from what should be an enjoyable experience. General fun and fitness swimming should be the priority here. And that's from Frank Henry, Park Lane, Twyford.
Next letter is headed Key Decisions, and it's written by Councillor Kathleen Becker. Sir, as a lawyer with years of experience in public law and constitutions, I must say that Councillor Horrell's statement regarding Councillor Gottlieb's understanding of the new constitution was wholly inaccurate and grossly unfair. At the meeting, Councillor Gottlieb posed thoughtful and important questions on the Constitution based on his thorough and close reading of each draft version. He is absolutely correct that the Constitution provides for key decisions to be taken away from full council and given to small groups of cabinet members. He is also right in saying that this deliberately excludes the views of most councillors and the residents they represent from being heard when important decisions are being made. Winchester residents deserve open and transparent decision-making from their council, and these features are sorely lacking in the current administration. Written by Kathleen Becker, St Bartholomew Ward, Water Lane, Winchester.
Unusually, this is a letter from a woman, Judith Martin, headed Ivy Owner. Sir, it's interesting to see the thread of letters about the ivy. I admire their planting and wish other food outlets could improve theirs to compete. However, I've never set foot in the place and have no intention of ever doing so. Not only do I object to the £3.50 coffee, I object far more strongly to the behaviour of the owner, Richard Caring. Last year, the Financial Times ran an expose of the goings-on at the Grope Fest, that is the President's Club, a men-only organisation for the super-rich to support good causes in a remarkable manner. The only women present were the hostesses, some of whom broke confidentiality agreements to talk to the press. From the FT article of the 23rd of January 2018, "A boob job for the missus and 10 grand to get me started," bellowed Johnny Gould, the man who presented Channel 5's Major League Baseball show. To whip up the crowd, his introduction to Lot 8 was typical, a course of plastic surgery donated by 111 Harley Street Clinic, whose founder, Dr. Yanis Alexanderides, was on the guest list. "Close your eyes and you're sleeping with the most beautiful woman in the world," Mr. Gould added before bringing on one of the hostesses hired by agency Artista up on the stage as a living advertisement and watching as she pointed out the various parts of her anatomy, that had been done at the clinic. With a winning bid of £25,000, Mr. Gould proclaimed the prize won by the legend that is Richard Caring, owner of a string of high-end restaurants, including the Ivy. A subsequent auction reached its peak, with Mr. Caring bidding £400,000 for naming rights at a new intensive care unit at Evelina London Children's Hospital, earning the restaurateur a standing ovation. In 2015, Mr. Caring told the Evening Standard he was non-dom for tax reasons. In the third quarter of the same year, he was the biggest donor to the Conservative Party. Perhaps if all non-doms paid their British tax, there would be no need for sleazy fundraisers to support children's hospitals. And this is Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Now, as it happens, this next letter is from a woman.
Oh, good.
Also. It's from Karen Barrett, who heads her letter Happy City. "Sir, I wondered at the time what the Royal Mail would do with its privatised profits after it was sold off cheap by the Coalition's business secretary, Vince Cable. Would the price of a postage stamp come down, or would my postman be paid a bit more? Now we know. In the worthy cause of social research, Royal Mail is conducting happiness surveys, as reported in the Chronicle, March the 28th. How reassuring to know that commitment to stating the obvious, i.e. people living in more affluent locations are on balance less miserable than those in deprived areas, is receiving such support. As someone with somewhere to live and no immediate money worries, I conform to this happy Winchester stereotype, but when I talk to low-paid NHS workers, tenants struggling with high private rents, elderly people whose bus services have been cut, and rough sleepers, my spark of joy is suddenly extinguished. Still, at least surveys like this perpetuate the myth that there is no deprivation in the South. That's from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
In the second letter, titled Happy City, is written by Simon Lever. Sir, this accolade is most deserved. From personal experience and that of visitors from different parts of the UK and indeed other European countries, positivity, kindness and indeed a ready smile greets most people. Compared with other locations, we do enjoy the unique benefit of living in or nearby not only an historic gem, but also so close to the spectacular views afforded visitors and residents alike from St Giles Hill, the Water Meadows and St Catherine's Hill. Happiness is not automatic and certainly not an act. It comes from a genuine feeling of contentment and a smile certainly is infectious. That's written by Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
We now leave the febrile atmosphere of contemporary Winchester and move to more tranquil time events of past times. So we'll be looking at historical items from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
And this is from 200 years ago, Monday, April the 5th, 1819. Few occurrences can more strongly evince the liberality of the inhabitants of Southampton, who profess themselves to be of the church established in these times, than the merry peal rung at Holyrood last Thursday, on account of the first stone being laid for the erection of a chapel.
This from 100 years ago, Saturday, April the 5th, 1919. The American rest camps, Winchester area, have closed down. And on Thursday morning, the citizens took a cordial farewell of the 500 representatives of the USA remaining at Maun Hill, out of a total of 700,000 who have passed through the city in the course of the last 17 or 18 months. We were able to announce in advance the fact of the approaching departure, and the mayor subsequently intimated the fact to the citizens.
50 years ago was Saturday, April the 5th, 1969. The ever-increasing difficulties of traffic and parking do not make the task of household shopping any easier for the busy housewife. Indeed, a car may well be more of a liability than a help in shopping in the centre of any busy town today, and the existence of a good neighbourhood shopping precinct on the perimeter proves a boon to not only shoppers living in the area, but also to others who find that ease of access and adequate parking facilities make it simpler to shop than to battle with traffic problems or bus queues to reach the high street shops. Such a shopping precinct is at Harestock, one of Winchester's newest suburbs. Here, in Priorsdean Road, a group of shops to serve all day-to-day needs provides a very useful service to the residents in the area and ample parking space for 200 cars. An added attraction is the parking is free.
25 years ago, Thursday, March the 31st, 1994. A Winchester management consultant has sent a hard-hitting letter to the City Council complaining about the systematic destruction of traffic flows in Winchester. Edwin Tozer of Andover Road claims road closures and diversions have contributed to the closure of retail businesses in the city centre, and that visiting motorists are taking their custom elsewhere. The council's decision to make the Upper High Street one way was implemented without investigating the potential side effects, according to Mr. Tozer. In his letter, he states, "There's a long history of right-handed decisions of a similar nature. I don't want our city to become a motorist's playground. I want the central environment to be both pleasant and thriving. And especially I want motorists who do not need to come to the centre to be able to avoid doing so." He lists numerous suggestions on how traffic flow could be improved and urges the council to have more consideration for the different categories of road users. "It is commonly assumed that you're seeking to limit traffic access to central Winchester. I sympathise strongly with such a goal and believe the city could benefit greatly from appropriate measures. However, it is also widely rumoured that your intention is to make getting into central Winchester by car as unpleasant and time-consuming as possible, to motivate motorists to use instead the yet-to-be-delivered park-and-ride schemes."
Next, we have the editorial from the Hampshire Chronicle, and that will then be followed by First Person.
So this is the editorial comment, and it's entitled "A Throwback to Crueler Times." Despite the fact that it has been banned in this country for almost 200 years, dog fighting refuses to go away. With hare coursing and badger baiting, it's part of the seedy underbelly of this nation of animal lovers. Almost 150 reports of dog fighting have been reported in Hampshire over the last 4 years, and 7,915 across the UK. So how many fights are going ahead each day unreported? Two unfortunate canines could be ripping each other to bits in a warehouse next door to your office or in an outbuilding in your quiet village. It's an underworld activity fueled by betting and greed as much as bloodlust. The RSPCA has urged the public to call its 24-hour cruelty line on 0300 1234 999 if they suspect a dog fight is taking place. There's enough cruelty to dogs through carelessness and ignorance without adding to it with this willful abuse. Sadly, the RSPCA says many of the dogs used by dog fighters are never found, and those who are rescued are often found to be banned breeds under the Dangerous Dogs Act and cannot legally be rehomed.
Right, Khalid Aziz writes, "Keeping the Faith. Within the space of a fortnight, two news stories have collided over a religion that for most is to be tolerated but probably not celebrated, and for some abhorred and fought against at every turn. Islam. We awoke to our weekend in the middle of March to hear news of a massacre more heinous than the regicide suffered by Julius Caesar on the infamous Ides of March 2 millennia ago. The shooting of Muslim worshippers at a prayer 12,000 miles away in Christchurch, New Zealand. More than 50 killed and a similar number injured. It's curious we focus on numbers killed more than the ongoing suffering of the injured. Many with what modern parlance now calls life-changing injuries. After the initial shock, the aftermath. We were all moved by the quiet dignity of the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern. This traditionally mild-mannered country needed unifying in its bewildered, it could never happen here, state of shock. And so she did, with just the right words and a show of solidarity, as she donned a respectful headscarf to visit the bereaved. She was steely too. Swift action will follow to reform gun laws. And just as after the Australian Port Arthur shooting in 1996, no one demurred. Americans take note. We were all surely behind Prime Minister Ahern in her policy of not naming the perpetrator. As a Cub reporter, I once voiced an internal BBC news meeting that we seemed to give more prominence to criminals than victims, only to be met with eye-rolling from hoary old news hands who told me I had much to learn about the news business. I wonder if much has changed. What is certain is that without some kind of control, the media in all its forms can and will run amok in the pursuit of eyeballs, as Facebook and YouTube demonstrated when they failed to stop the gunman live streaming his despicable act. Surely they can no longer hide behind the "we're just publishing" platform nonsense. Back in the UK, Brexit aside, a story which has been gaining ground is the growing concern of some Muslims over their primary school-aged children being given sex education, which includes information about sexuality, homosexuality, and the existence of gay marriage. Should they be able to withdraw their children from such classes? Well, yes, say those for whom parental rights and control are all. No, say those who think they can only, through education, stamp out prejudice. I wonder which side the Christchurch gunman would have been on. Get rid of all religions, I hear some say. But religions are here and probably to stay. We all have to deal with it. Finally, by the time you read this, who knows where Brexit will be? What I do know is that whether you're a Leaver or Remainer, we all have common cause with the view that organising an alcoholic party in a brewery comes to mind when you look at the way that it's all been managed. We can all agree that the process has done less than burnish the UK's reputation abroad. I'm writing this while on business in South Africa, where I'm often asked, "How's Brexit going?" Each time I sense the questioner is inwardly sniggering, revelling in the fact that a so-called mature democracy has ended up looking like a third-world Ruritania. They'll be taking no more lectures on statecraft from us. At times like this, nostalgia weighs heavily. What would Mrs. Thatcher have made of it all? Love her or hate her, you can't help thinking we wouldn't be in the bind we are of, that we now find ourselves with her hands on the levers of power and possibly around the throats of Messrs. Tusk, Juncker and Barnier. But perhaps I'm just getting old and should remember that nostalgia never was what it used to be.
Now to the week's announcements. All listeners, volunteers and friends of the Winchester Talking Newspaper are invited to attend the Winchester Talking Newspaper AGM on Tuesday the 16th of April at 2:30 p.m. in Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall. There will be a talk by Lieutenant Colonel Chris Davis, OBE of the Royal Marines, now retired, whose chosen charity is Blind Veterans UK. And he will be talking about A Life on the Ocean Wave, a personal insight into life as a musician in the Royal Marines. And afterwards, please join us for afternoon tea. So if you would like to come to the Talking Newspaper Annual General Meeting, that's on Tuesday the 16th of April, 2:30 in Littleton Memorial Hall. If you could let John Richards, our chairman, know that you're coming. His telephone number is 023-8073-2888. That's 023-8073-2888. Just so we give some idea of the numbers coming. A few items of talks and events happening in Winchester that you may be interested in. The next three Winchester Catholic History Group speakers have been announced, and each event takes place in Milner Hall in St Peter Street at 7:30 p.m. On Monday, the 8th of April, that's this coming Monday, Matthew Morgan of the National Gallery will give a talk entitled Rubens and the Counter-Reformation. On Monday, the 13th of May, Dr. Elena Woodacre of Winchester University will talk about Isabel of Castile and Ferdinand of Aragon. And then on Monday, the 3rd of June, John Merriman, also of Winchester University, will talk about the impact of the Black Death on the Diocese of Winchester. Tickets cost £5 at the door, with concessions available. Winchester explorer John Pilkington will give a talk in aid of the End Polio Now campaign. John has recently been following the route that Queen Victoria's government took in 1868 to rescue European hostages in the Ethiopian Highlands. His talk, entitled To Eritrea and Ethiopia, will recall his experiences and is taking place at the Winchester Discovery Centre on Thursday, April the 11th. Doors will open at 7 p.m. and tickets cost £10 in person or by calling 01962 873 603. That's 01962 873 603 for the talk by John Pilkington about Eritrea and Ethiopia. And I've heard him talk before, and he is a fascinating raconteur. And then the annual quiz night in aid of the Winchester Live at Home scheme will be on the 27th of April from 7:30 p.m. at the IBM Clubhouse in Hursley Park. And this will cost £20 per person, including an Indian meal. It is a maximum of 8 people per team, and individuals without a team will be assigned on the night. And tickets for this event can be bought from the Live at Home offices in the United Church Jury Street or by calling 01962 890 995. That's 01962 890 995 for the Winchester Live at Home quiz night on the 27th of April. Lighting up times, the sun is rising these days around about 6:30 a.m. in the morning and setting at about 7:45 p.m. in the evenings. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive one of our recordings, or if you yourself have problems with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. We now move on to items of general news interest.
Council homes officially opened in city centre. Civic chiefs have officially opened Winchester's latest affordable housing scheme in the city centre. Victoria Court, a block of 18 one- and two-bedroom flats off Victoria Road, aims to attract tenants wishing to downsize and help free up under-occupied family accommodation on estates such as Stanmore and Winnell. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, and Council Leader and Portfolio Holder for Housing, Councillor Caroline Horrell, cut the ribbon at a small ceremony. One of those resident, Andrew Gray, has moved into a flat with special adaptations to help with his mobility problems. He said, "Being here is a different world completely, and health-wise I do feel better." The City Council has long had a policy of building new council homes, stretching back to former leader George Beckett, and carried on by later leaders, but the scale of ambition has increased in recent months.
Beware TV license scam. A warning has been issued to residents over a TV license scam targeting members of the public. Action Fraud says the ongoing fraud campaign involves residents being sent a fake email designed to steal their personal and financial information. In the last 11 months, Action Fraud has been made aware of more than 900 crime reports worth a total of £830,000. It has issued the following warnings. Don't click on the links or attachments in suspicious emails, and never respond to messages that ask for your personal or financial details. Don't assume that a phone call or email is authentic, even if someone knows your basic details, such as your name or address. Remember, criminals can spoof phone numbers and email addresses to appear as companies you know and trust, such as TV licensing. Your bank will never call and ask you for your PIN, full banking password, or ask you to transfer money out of your account. Anyone concerned that they may have been conned can contact Action Fraud on 0300 123 2040. I'll just read that again. 0300 123 2040.
Final go-ahead given for new housing. Plans for more than 70 new council homes in Winchester have been signed off by civic chiefs. Winchester City Council's Housing Committee last week backed the full business case for the Valley Housing Scheme in Stanmore. The development already has planning permission for 77 new homes and will include a mix of 1, 2 and 3 bedroom flats, 2 and 3 bedroom houses and a 3 bedroom bungalow. Winchester City Council leader and portfolio holder for housing, Caroline Horrell, said, "This is fantastic news and it means that we can make real inroads in reducing the council waiting list and ensuring that our residents can live in the district. This scheme is also a key part of our strategy to build 1,000 homes over the next 10 years and also to continue to provide a range of housing options for residents. The housing development will offer a mix of affordable rented and shared ownership opportunities for the district's residents. Building work is expected to start in April and will benefit from a 3.2 million cash injection from Homes England, with the council seeking to secure further funds."
Zoo's Lego dinosaur causes stir en route. Stunned motorists were stopped in their tracks after spotting a giant 7-foot-tall Lego dinosaur travelling through quiet villages and along busy motorways. Bemused onlookers spotted the huge multicoloured Velociraptor being driven on the back of a flatbed truck. The sculpture, which weighs in at 50 stone, and is made using 68,370 different Lego bricks, is one of dozens which will go on display this Friday at Marwell Zoo near Winchester. It took 4 builders 260 hours to complete. From the Lego building workshop in Borden, the Velociraptor, named Vigo, was driven through quiet villages, including Wickham. Before completing the journey to the 140-acre wildlife park, the colourful sculpture shocked onlookers on the busy M27. One eyewitness who spotted the dinosaur in Wickham said, "It was a very peculiar sight to see a massive dinosaur. People were stopping in their tracks, doing a double take before taking out their phones to take a picture. Kids were absolutely delighted. Cyclists stopped in their tracks, and a bus driver even pulled over, got out of his bus to take a selfie with the dinosaur." The sculpture is one of 50, created using more than 2 million bricks, which will be displayed at Marwell Zoo as part of their Brickosaurs event. Included among them will be the largest touring Lego dinosaur ever made, a 26-foot-tall T-Rex, which will have to be transported in sections using a 40-ton lorry and rebuilt on site. The zoo's events manager, Nikki Cole, said, "We're so pleased Vigo the Velociraptor raised so many smiles on his way to us at the zoo. When an event opens for the first time, I love to see our guests' reactions, and it's the most satisfying part of anything we do. Brickosaurs is the biggest event the park has ever put on, and it's a world exclusive, so it's pretty epic in our books. The Velociraptor was built by a firm, Bright Bricks. Its creative director, Ed Dimmont, said, "Taking Vigo the Velociraptor on an open trailer from our workshop in Borden to Marble Zoo was a first for us. It was amazing to see people's reactions to a brick-built dinosaur, and we had a lot of questions from the public. We hope everyone who spotted Vigo enjoyed the experience."
50 lambs rustled at night from farmland. More than 50 lambs have been stolen at night from a field near Winchester. The three-week-old Welsh Mule and Texel Suffolk Cross lambs were snatched from a field in the Hursley area last Thursday. The National Farmers Union confirmed they were stolen between midnight and 6 a.m. Two dead lambs were left behind. PC Steve Rogerson from the Police Country Watch team said, "Understandably, the farmer is very concerned for the welfare of these animals. There is a possibility that the ewes could suffer and even die, and other lambs in the field could die as a result of shock. Those that were stolen are at risk of losing their lives in transit or from being away from their mothers and not being kept in the right environment. This theft will come at a huge financial loss to the farmer. But this incident is all the more distressing for the victim, as he has lambed these animals himself and raised the young ones from birth. It's very rare for something like this to happen in Hampshire, and we are asking our rural communities to spread the word so we can find these animals and ensure their safety." Hampshire NFU advisor Sandra Nichols said, "We have been appalled at this theft, as there are serious animal welfare implications for both the ewes and lambs."
Anger over release of civic newsletter. Councillors have demanded answers from civic chiefs as to why a newsletter that cost more than £10,000 was rushed to residents without their knowledge. Opposition Liberal Democrat councillors quizzed council leader Councillor Caroline Horrell over the About Winchester publication at the most recent full council meeting. The outcry comes as the newsletter was delivered to residents just 2 weeks before the purdah, a period in which councillors agree not to release promotional material in the build-up to local elections on May the 2nd. However, Councillor Horrell said councillors were not informed because a council officer had been absent from work. Councillor Therese Evans said, "I was extremely surprised to receive a hand-delivered copy of About Winchester through my letterbox. I thought we had an agreement that all communication to residents in their ward and parish councils were to be shared in advance to relevant councillors. In this case, all of us. Could the leader please explain why this newspaper was delivered without councillors' knowledge, including some of officers? Who or what committee made the decision? What was urgent about delivering key messages 2 weeks before election purdah?" Councillor Horrell responded, "There is no restriction on councillor communications until purdah starts, and distribution of the newsletter ended on Saturday, March the 16th. There are no photos of members, save for a single photograph of myself as leader and images of the mayor acting as an apolitical representative of the council. This is not out of step with other councils." The chief executive, Laura Taylor, had instructed that members were informed of the upcoming delivery. In this instance, it was the case of officer absence directly prior to the delivery that led to the omission of the article from the Democratic Services update before distribution. Councillor Horrell also revealed the newsletter cost to the council was £10,340.44 to produce, print and distribute. Liberal Democrat City Councillor Martin Todd has slammed the Conservative administration after his research has shown that the council's communication spending has rocketed by more than £90,000 in the last 2 years. Total spending on communications, including staff costs, has increased from £250,000 to £341,000 in 2 years. Councillor Todd said, at a time when there are brutal financial pressures on schools and social care, when road repairs take months and when the council can't even collect the bins on time and the city council's finances are in chaos with huge deficits predicted in future years, it is shocking that the Conservatives think that the right priority is to ramp up spending on PR and spin.
Streetlights to be dimmed. Plans to shut off street lighting for 3 hours a night across Hampshire will come into force from this Monday, April the 5th. Approved last October by Hampshire County Council, civic chiefs say the move, which will see no lighting on residential roads between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. every night, will save £230,000 a year. However, they add that street lighting in certain high crime areas will either not be turned off at all or timings varied. It will be judged on a case-by-case basis, the council says. Street lights on roads with vertical traffic calming, such as speed bumps or in the vicinity of light-controlled crossings, will also not be switched off. Illuminated road signs and bollards are unaffected by the proposal. The decision, made on October the 29th by Transport and Environmental Chief Rob Humby, who is also a Winchester City Councillor, will see a reduction in the authority's carbon dioxide output by 220 tonnes per year, saving £12,960 in avoided carbon tax. This will also contribute to the council's objective to reduce its CO2 impact, it says. The move does not affect Southampton, which controls its own lighting. As previously reported, the authority has gradually reduced its street light usage over the past few years. Currently, it dims lights on residential roads by 45% from switch-on until 11:30 p.m. and at 65% from then until 5:30 a.m. It is then raised back to 45% until switch-off. On major roads, this dimming is lessened to a maximum of 50% during the early hours. By the end of 2018, the council says its energy consumption will be less than half of what it was in 2010, with savings of around £2 million a year. But this new proposal will allow even more cash to be saved. This comes after 5,444 people took part in a public consultation into the plans, as well as 141 organisations, businesses and groups. From the report, it was found that more than two-thirds of respondents supported the county's council's proposal to turn streetlights off, and a dark period of between 3 and 4 hours, starting between midnight and 1 a.m, was widely supported. The council noted that almost half of the respondents said that they would prefer lights to stay on at night in town and city centres, but were most supportive of lighting being turned off in residential areas.
Swift action to save birds. Winchester City Council are to build up to 100 nesting boxes for swifts on local properties thanks to a new partnership. The collaboration with Hampshire Swift Group will allow the council to provide the birds with much-needed nesting across the city. Due to a reduction in the number of suitable sites and lack of insect food, the population of swifts has fallen. Winchester City Council portfolio holder for the environment, Councillor Jan Warwick, said, This work has been made possible by Winchester City Council investing in biodiversity and employing a new ecologist who is leading on this project. We are delighted that this work is resulting in these new boxes being erected, along with other features to protect and improve biodiversity. The boxes will provide new nesting places for the birds as part of a large re-roofing programme being undertaken by the council in Highcliffe and Stanmore. Tim Norris of Hampshire Swifts said, "Swifts fly thousands of miles from southern Africa to Britain to breed, but the suitable nesting sites are becoming increasingly difficult to find due to modern construction methods. Sadly, the British swift population has declined by about 50% in the last 20 years. By providing artificial nesting sites, we are helping to halt the decline of swifts and other birds." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Councillor Jan Warwick holding a swift box. There's not a lot to say about this box, to tell you the truth. It's a sort of oblong box with a lid and it's got a hole in it. But presumably it's big enough for the swifts to go in or out.
It's a swift box.
Hmm.
Very fast. NHS eye test for homeless. A pilot scheme launched by NHS England is providing NHS sight tests and glasses for homeless people. The pilot starts in April 2018 and has now been extended to include Trinity Winchester. Across the region, it has helped more than 132 people receive a free sight test and 113 pairs of free spectacles. NHS-funded sight tests can normally only be accessed if the individual has a fixed address as part of the eligibility criteria. This is usually difficult for the homeless. The initial four shelters, two in Southampton, one in Portsmouth and one in Bournemouth, were chosen based on homeless statistics. Now five more shelters in Winchester, Andover, Gosport, Weymouth and another in Bournemouth have been added. Optometrists with the necessary mobile equipment deliver eye care services to the shelters fortnightly. Hannah Scott, operations manager at Trinity, said, "This has been an excellent service and a valuable addition to some of the other healthcare offered at Trinity. Our clients have been taken through eye tests and have received their glasses within 10 days, all free of charge. This has made a huge difference in clients' lives and reassuring them their eyesight was fine or allowing them to see properly thanks to new glasses."
Car dealer in $1 billion deal to take over rival. It is one of the biggest deals in region's motoring history, creating a $1 billion dealership. The Hendy Group, one of the South's best-known car dealers, has taken over big-name rivals, the Wiltshire-based Westover Group. The deal, for an undisclosed sum, sees Hendy, which has its headquarters in Chandlesford, become a $1 billion turnover company with 2,000 employees and a network of outlets stretching from Exeter to Eastbourne. The acquisition means Hendy Group now operates 26 franchises from 83 outlets, making it one of the UK's largest dealer networks, and reinforces the group's presence in Dorset and Wiltshire. Hendy Chief Executive Paul Hendy said the acquisition was a key milestone for the company, which celebrates its 160th anniversary this year. Westover is a hugely successful group and shares our philosophy of delivering a premium service and putting the customer and its employees at the heart of operations, said Paul. The Westover Group, founded in 1923 as a Morris dealer, employed more than 725 people and represented 15 vehicle manufacturers. The firm had just completed its £15 million Jaguar Land Rover showroom in Christchurch.
Winchester firm to create 90 jobs. A new Winchester human resources firm says it's set to create almost 100 jobs over the next 2 years. Oberon Solutions, based in Southgate Street, was established earlier this year as an offshoot of Thorold Dewling, a specialist recruitment agency for the oil and gas sector. Company boss George Reed said there was growing demand for extra services on top of recruiting, including payroll and drawing up employment contracts. Oberon has now secured funding from Lloyds Bank to expand the firm, which currently has 6 staff. Mr. Reed says Oberon has growth targets of 300% over the next 12 months, and the business expects to create up to 90 new jobs over the next 2 years. Oberon offers a range of services, from hiring and employees to managing pensions and benefits, developing training programmes and overseeing compliance.
Emergency food bank use soars. Winchester Basics Bank, that helps people in emergency need, has seen its workload rise steeply last year. The bank has become a last resort for hundreds of people struggling financially. Since May 2018, it has been operating 7 days a week, up from 5, according to its annual report. Demand is so high that St. Peter's Roman Catholic Church is helping by storing 200 crates of food. The bank reports that in 2018 it served food and clothing for 1,411 people, up 11% on the previous 12 months. Most people only needed help once, but a small number were helped on up to 8 occasions. Reasons for going included delays in receiving benefits, loss of a job and sickness. The report said the bank has improved its facilities by buying 2 industrial fridges and better shelving. It is looking to move its base from Highcliffe closer to the city centre and to larger premises where food and clothing can be stored in one place. A fundraising campaign last year generated £54,016 compared to £17,504 in 2017. The bank is an ecumenical Christian charity that was established in 2004. Its main base is in Milland Road, Highcliffe, with 2 satellite branches in St Barnabas in Week and St Luke's Church in Stanmore. It has around 70 volunteers.
Homes at Centre. Plans to replace a former daycare centre with new homes have been given the go-ahead. The approved application for the Grove Day Centre site in Hinton Fields, Kingsworthy, will see the building demolished and replaced with 8 homes. The plans were resubmitted just weeks after a scheme was approved by Winchester City Council so extensions could be added. According to a planning statement submitted by Chapman Lilly on behalf of developers Fortitudo Limited, the proposed development will make efficient use of the redundant site, providing 8 much-needed new homes in a highly sustainable location. The development will see a mix of 6 4-bedroom and 2 3-bedroomed houses, the same as the original scheme, but will include a small orangery-style, single-storey rear addition to the ground floor of each new home. 2 of the homes would front directly onto Hinton Fields, and the remaining 6 would be arranged around an access drive. The development would also include 23 car parking spaces. The approval comes around 1 year after the Hampshire County Council, which ran the site as a day centre for adults with learning disabilities, decided to sell the land.
Trust's £20,000 restoration of Avenue of Lime Trees. New Alsford Town Trust have finished a major renovation project on the Avenue in Alsford. The avenue was given to the town by the Bishop of Winchester 150 years ago this year, and some of the lime trees are close to that age. Trustee Keith Dyvall said that a lot of effort had gone into sustain the heritage of those who have looked after the Avenue over the last 150 years and to continue the legacy of the lovely gateway to the town from the west. There are well over 100 trees on the northern side of the Avenue alone. Mr. Dyvall said, "We have spent £20,000 working on the trees, including replacing some because of disease, but we have replaced them all with the same species. We are grateful to the Town Council, all of our sponsors, and of course the people of Alresford for their support of the Town Trust. 2019 is the 150th anniversary of the gift of the Avenue to the town, and we want it to be in great condition for the celebrations on September the 20th. The Avenue is part of an 18th century turnpike or toll road between Winchester and Alton. On September the 23rd, 1969, the Mayor of Winchester attended a ceremony on the Avenue to celebrate the centenary of the Bishop's gift. This was before the bypass was built, and the Chronicle reported at the time that any words spoken were drowned by the noise of passing traffic. In recent years, the Trust has suffered reduced financial support from local government and offers people the chance to become a friend for a minimum subscription of £25 per annum.
Airport travellers, in quotes, will not be hit by Brexit, unquote. Brexit will not impact holidaymakers using Southampton Airport, its managing director has confirmed, even if the UK leaves the EU without a deal. Neil Garwood even went as far as to let those hoping to plan their summers to book with confidence following new guarantees on air travel between both UK and European leaders. "It's pretty straightforward," he said. "In any scenario, if we leave with a deal or no deal or any variation of said deal, we have confirmation that flying is unaffected. This means that flying will continue as it does today. There are no issues from Brexit." This will be welcome news for many holidaymakers hoping to jet away after the UK leaves the EU. If you want to book your holiday now, especially if you want to get your mind off Brexit and look forward to something, get it done, added Mr. Neil, who took over the role last May. "Things will be the same in any Brexit scenario. We are very pleased to be able to say that." The news from the city's airport comes in the midst of high uncertainty over Brexit, but Neil was happy to confirm that the airport would be unaffected. He said, "It's great news that air travel will be unaffected, but we still want to see certainty on a Brexit outcome. It's unsettling for business. We need to see some clarity. But business generally finds a way, and when the odds are stacked against them, they may come back with more resilience."
On that positive piece of Brexit news, that concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors, Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Tony Bergstrom.
Bye-bye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.